Svayam Upakara Mayantara Dushara Kutin Namam Vishnu Draya Krishna Vista Mutari Shumate Rattvidin Kuswami Ittunami Namaste Sasvati Deve Govani Pichayne Nivishishu Shunari Pishatari Shatari Anchakopa Tripasya Kipalasini Vivita Ajitanam Bhavani Vyo Vaishnavi Vyo Namo Namo Jai Shri Krishna, Chaitanya, Bhava Nityananda, Shri Advaita Gadadhara, Srinivasani Govardhana, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're reading from Canto 5, Chapter 9, verse number 16. Maya vatitan manatma lingam. Maya vatitan manatma lingam. Samsara tattava paranamjanasya. Samsara tattava paranamjanasya. Yashokama mohamaya vagalubha. Yashokama mohamaya vagalubha. Vaivani vandam mamatam vidate. Vadanu vandam mamatam vidate. Maya vatitam manatma lingam. Samsara chapara pananjanasya. Yatsoka muhamaya galubha. Vaidanu vandam manatam vidate. Ladies. Not yavat, as long as etat, this manaha, mind, atmalingam, existing as the four designations of this whole. Samsara tapa, after miseries of this material world. Avapanam, the growing ground. Janasya, of the living being. Yat, which, Soka, have lamentation, more have illusion, have disease, dagger, have attachment, lower have greed, driver of enmity, anubandham, the consequence, mamatam, the sense of ownership, vidate, gives. Translation. The self's designation, the mind, is the cause of all tribulations in the material world. As long as this fact is unknown to the conditioned living entity, he has to accept the miserable condition of the material body and wander within this universe in different positions. Because the mind is affected by this disease, lamentation, illusion, attachment, greed and enmity, it creates bondage and a false sense of intimacy within this material world. The mind is the cause of material bondage and liberation. The impure mind thinks, I am this body. The pure mind knows that he is not the material body. Therefore, the mind is considered to be the root of all material designations. Until the living entity is aloof from the association and contamination of this material world, the mind will be absorbed in such material things as birth, death, disease, illusion, attachment, greed, and enmity. In this way, the living entity is conditioned and he suffers material miseries. So, to begin with, I first of all want to ask for the blessings of all the excellent devotees here, and especially the senior devotees and the disciples. So, we can offer some little service here and say something of some of the meaning and significance. Also, since this is the first time I've been invited to give a written class here, I thought I'd take a few minutes just to briefly introduce myself, because I think many of you have not met, and usually it's always some little interest who is the speaker here. So my name is Devaki Devi Dasi. I am originally German, but I have never lived in Germany as a devotee. Sometimes things like that happen in Krishna, just things in a different way. So I left already Germany in 1984. I was 25 at the time. I was actually working as a physiotherapist in rehabilitation, so I was earning good money. But I clearly realized that people need some other rehabilitation, and that I cannot really give people true happiness with my treatment. So then at some point I became so dissatisfied that I decided to give it up. And I sold everything and gave everything away. And I simply packed the backpack and I started traveling, looking for the medicine which would give real happiness. And I had quite a few adventures, as you might imagine. I traveled all around Europe, in the southern part of Africa, and around Australia. And finally, in Australia, I met the devotees. That was in 1985. I actually came to an ISKCON farm without knowing anything about Krishna consciousness. And after 4 days, I decided this is it. I had found the medicine. And since then, I never left the Association of the Devotees. So I immediately joined the Brahmacharini Ashram. I was there for 4 years, getting the basic training in spiritual life, and I took initiation of Pranayama. These were the Zonal Acharya days. So then, some 4 years later, I was entering married life. I was married for 10 years. And almost 2 months after getting married, we ventured to the former Soviet Union. And somehow, by Krishna's arrangement, we did not even realize what we were actually doing. But somehow it so happened that we organized the first more established temple in the former Soviet Union. This was in Latvia, the Baltics. This is the most western part of former Soviet Union. And this, as you may imagine, was a very adventurous time. We actually started with nothing. We had even no spices, no saris, no didis, no bullion, nothing. And the first year, 89, we came there. We even had to hire it from the KGB. And the first programs we had to conduct in the forest, so that we would be safe from any cameras or anything. And nobody knocking on the doors and raiding the program or something. So it was really quite an amazing challenge, which was a perfect ground for really, yes, kind of developing myself a little bit, you could say, a fresh challenge. And also during that time, I took reinitiation of Pada Vishnu Guru. So, and then in 99, my former husband decided to take a break from Krishna consciousness, and he married a non-devotee. Basically, this shows the power of the mind. You can be in the most amazing transcendental adventure, but if your mind is somewhere else, sooner or later you end up on a different track. And that's exactly what happened to me. So then I thought, okay, let me take that as a new challenge. And then I moved on to the renounced order. So I didn't always look like this. I used to have earrings and bangles and nose rings and silk saris and blah, blah, blah. So, but then I really felt no need for this anymore. I was 40 at the time, so maybe it was a little early, but for me it was very natural. So, and since then, since 1999, I am basically living out of a suitcase. I'm living as a traveling preacher. And I spend 6 months in this part of the world and 6 months in Europe. When I'm in Europe, I'm mainly in Ukraine, very dynamic preaching then. But now, since the last 2-3 years, I'm also daring to go to Germany. I have to admit, I was almost making a big circle in my journey somehow. But now I'm also there a little bit. And Sweden, Baltics, Moldova, a few little countries along with Ukraine. But my main focus is Ukraine. And when I'm in this part of the world, my main focus is Bangladesh. I'm there about 3 months per year. And I'm also spending a couple of months here in Nepal. And I also go to Nepal, and I'm planning to spend a little bit more time in there. And recently, just 2 years ago, I one more time took reinitiation of His Holiness Niranjana Swami. He's been the source of my inspiration for many years. Actually, just on the side, you know, I had 3 goes at taking Diksha. And I tell you frankly, all these 3 personalities were the perfect view at a certain time for me. That's actually how Guru Tattva works. Krishna sends the right person at the right time to take us further. So there is no loss, no lamentation. No regret, nothing. It was all simply perfect. Amazing. Yeah, so, and in my 100 preaching attempts, I have 2 main focuses. 1 focus, and actually I have very strong convictions that this is where it's at. Well, we have to have that, otherwise what's the use of life? You know, you have to have some bonds and convictions to, you know, sacrifice yourself for.
So one of my convictions is that we have to make an attempt to get on deeper levels of chanting in Japa as well as Kirtan. I'm firmly convinced of this. That's why we conduct holy name retreats where I'm going in these countries. In Moldova, Ukraine, Sweden, the Baltics, Nepal, Bangladesh, even Eka Chakra, maybe you've heard, maybe you saw, there's a new post on the board. Using the opportunity to make a little advertisement here and invite you all to come out to Eka Chakra on the 24th of February. I'll be honored to serve you, so please come and be my guest. So, holy name is one conviction, and the other one is spiritual culture, because Bangladesh is the place to get insights into the sweetness and beauty of spiritual culture. It's almost like a different planet, even to here, to Mayapur, different world. The fact that it is a Muslim country has really preserved the culture, and you really feel like you are entering Chaitanya Charitamrita. Really amazing. So over the last 15 years, I have learned a lot of things doing. And we don't need to spend too much time. I see already the clock is moving. But anyway, just to quickly give you some ideas, spiritual culture is Krishna's culture, and it has universal underlying principles, which are applicable anywhere and everywhere. Maybe the details look a little different according to times, place, and circumstance, but the principles are there. And you find them in any spiritual culture, even in Christianity, Muslim, anywhere. Same spiritual principles are there, just a little different in the application. So it's a very deep and interesting topic, and yes, I'm making some of the attempts here to promote the importance of spiritual culture. Okay, so let us go to our verse today. I've got a paper here to help me keep my mind on track. Let's see how far we get. So the topic of the verse is the power of the mind. As Prabhupada is saying, in the parable, the mind is the cause of both material bondage and liberation. So depending on how we engage the mind, we have the two tracks there. Either liberation, upliftment, back home, back to Godhead, or further entanglement and misery. And furthermore, Prabhupada says in the purport, therefore, the mind is considered to be the root of all material designations. So this is quite an interesting topic. I basically want to focus on the subtle body of mind, intelligence, and false designations. So the mind out of the three is actually the more grosser element, and it gets more subtle as it goes, similar like earth, water, fire, air, ether. Earth is also the most gross one, and ether is the most subtle one. Same thing there is in the subtle body. So the false ego is the most subtle part of the subtle body, and it is so subtle that we really tend to not even, be aware of it. And because we identify so much with it, that's why we don't even realize how much we are still under the dictations of the false ego. This is really very interesting, very relevant, so important, and also very practical thing. So let us remember at the moment of death We do leave behind the gross body, like the old and useless clothes. And the subtle body, as we know, takes the soul to the next existence. So depending on how the subtle body is formed, especially the mind is very, very instrumental in this, that determines our next gross body. So now if we want to go back to Godhead, the subtle body has to be dissolved. We have to dissolve the material mind, the material intelligence, and also the false ego. And this is not such an easy thing. It doesn't happen simply automatically, just by being in ISKCON and being initiated or something. It's unfortunately not like that. Actually, we do have to perform some hard work, some deep internal hard work. We have to be extremely introspective to actually manage to dissolve, really, this whole body. Often devotees ask, so how is this supposed to look like? And they don't have much to do, because I'm going to share so many things with you. But in any case, just very briefly, the material mind has to be so absorbed and focused on Krishna and only Krishna, hearing about Krishna, chanting his holy name, being busy in service, all the material aspects are simply transformed. There's no more material mind there. It's all completely spiritualized. And similar thing with the intelligence. The mind, of course, being the chief in some way, influences the intelligence and also the false ego. So that the mind, if the mind is so spiritualized, it will transform the intelligence simply in such a way that we see everything in connection in relationship with Krishna. And that also actually really makes a whole transformation to the intelligence. There's a big difference between the material intelligence from a non-devotee professor at the university and the spiritual intelligence of a devotee. Whole worldview is completely upside down, like day and night. So in that way, the intelligence also gets completely transformed so that no material intelligence is left. In a sense, it does not mean that we, you know, forget all the things we might have learned at university or something, but it simply means that everywhere we see Krishna in it, and that does transform the whole intelligence. And of course, false ego, meaning false identifications, designations, they also have to be completely washed away. That all the different upadis are simply cleared off. And the only identification, and really the only one, is I am servant, nothing else. Basically, only then we make it back to God. And I mean, this is a long topic. Actually, I tell you frankly, when I was recently in Bangladesh, I put a 5-session seminar on this together. So that's why it's a little hard for me to give you a little synopsis of it, because there's so many deep and super interesting things there to do. But in any case, not so easy. This is the point where the process that looks externally very simple, like, yes, just chant Hare Krishna and be happy, looks very simple externally, but usually these processes are very deep and not so simple. They're very internal and deep. And, well, one has the choice, you know, whether one just takes the external simple thing and not worry about the deep internal thing, or whether one wants to really get to the roots of everything. So basically, the mind leads us to false designations, which is the most subtle part of the subtle body. And we have, of course, we've been carrying the same subtle body with us for so many lifetimes. So many. So we actually have such a big layer of material mind, intelligence, and false ego there, the mind. So many impressions from so many lifetimes are ingrained there, which sometimes come up at night in dreams and so on. So, yeah, I mean, this is quite a job to really dissolve this, and I'm almost convinced that not so easy to do this in one lifetime, actually. I think maybe of us do need some lifetimes. And no harm, that's the harm. We always need some more advanced soul to take birth in a devoted family and push on the teaching. So no loss. No loss for anyone. So unfortunately, we don't remember all of these false designations. That's actually really Krishna's mercy. So in every lifetime, we just get one set of upadis. You know? And thank God we don't remember all the other ones, otherwise we would go completely mad. You know? So, and these upadis, we accumulate them already as a young child. Believe it or not, already 1 year old, a child has a false ego. It usually manifests that children, when you come as a visitor, they want to show me their toys. Right? Have you ever had that? You know? I remember I was once visiting a Grihastha family, and they had a girl, 1 year old, who couldn't even talk. And she was getting all her toys out, all showing them to me. And her mother said, God, she's just showing off because you were there. You know? So that's already with 1 year of age, the living entity thinks, I am so special. Look at my toys. I want to be the center here. You know? Yes, yes. And as the living entity grows, we accept one upadi after another. We accept one upadi after another. It starts, yes, I'm a little boy. I remember our Raj Mohan Prabhu at the GBC meetings. He was once at the Shah meeting, he was saying, I know, I am cute. Because everybody says, oh, you're so cute, you know, so I know, I am cute. So that's how the parties develop, you know, one after another. So I'm a cute little boy. I am a pupil, I'm going to school. I'm a student. Now I'm studying this. Now I'm, you know, becoming a teacher or a professor or whatever. So one upadi after another. Now I'm husband, now I'm father. And in the end, the layer gets thicker and thicker. So of course, there are roles we are playing. There are roles, simply. We are not meant to identify with them. They're actually like hats. You know, you wear the, even as a devotee, you know, same thing happens there. We collect all different parties. So now I'm a new bhakta. Now I'm a brahmachari. Now I'm becoming Sankirtan devotee. Sankirtan department leader. This, that, you know, the list goes on. Through our lifetime, we accumulate them. So, yes, of course, we might be functioning in these propensities, in these roles, but they're simply like hats we are carrying, we are wearing. The brahmachari hat, then comes another hat, the father hat, whatever, so, you know, temple president hat. But we are not the hat. They're simply designations we are wearing, and According to them, we play certain roles. Or we can say, like, we drive different vehicles. We might have a bicycle, we might have a scooter also, and we might have a Mercedes standing in the garage. And then we might also be a truck driver and have a truck there too. So all different vehicles according to different times and circumstances in our life, but we are not identifying with them. We are simply the driver. So that unfortunately, we do identify with them. That's the problem. Actually, when I was in Bangladesh giving the seminar, I'm mainly working in Bangladesh actually with the boys, with the brother Charles and the student boys, like another. Works very nicely, very sweet. So I was giving the seminar to 80 Brahmacharis and Bhaktas, and I was asking them to put on role plays. Role plays are an excellent tool to deepen the learning experience. And some really sweet, sweet role plays came up. I mean, some of them was really moving my heart. I almost started crying. And then one group played this role play. One devotee started, yes, I'm Bhakta, I'm Brahmachari. He had all the hats. He was piling them up on his head there. The head was getting bigger and bigger. And the ego was getting bigger and bigger. So, and then Krishna appeared on the scene. One boy played Krishna and he played the flute. And he actually played it really, really beautiful. And that sound of the flute entered the devotee's ear and brought about a change of heart, which is, of course, the mantra. And he started lamenting, oh my God, Krishna, I have forgotten you for so many lifetimes. I thought I'm this and this and that, but now I realize I am actually only your servant, your humble servant, nothing else. And he offered all his hats at the feet of Krishna. He piled them all up on Krishna's feet and simply fell in dandavats in front of Krishna there playing the flute. And it was very, very sweet and so deep. And with such sincerity he played it. It was really heart moving. Then another group, one boy put on one of these Muslim burqas, the black things where you can see under the eyes, and he played the false ego. He had false ego written over his chest. And he was always whispering in the devotee's ear, you are great, you are the best, you are right, everybody else is wrong. You better tell them, you know it all, and you are the center. And it was really, again, fantastic, you know, he was always sneaking around, whispering in one ear, whispering in the other ear like this. You're like, how are false egos constantly whispering so much nonsense into our ears? That's where I learned that whispering means in Bangla. It means the word is fish fish. Isn't that funny? I said it was really hilarious. It's almost fish fish. You know, it you can hear what it means. So yes. False ego is fish fishing, you know, into our ears constantly, all day. We don't even notice, we don't even realize. You know? It's going on all the time. So now, unfortunately, what we do is we defend, you know. The false ego is so dear to us that we tend to defend immediately and protect. That's the problem. Actually, the whole process of Krishna consciousness, I'm cutting under a few things here. I wanted to read the nice verse 1858, where Krishna says, if you do not hear me, but act under false ego, not hearing me, you will be lost. This is really what's happening. We basically, we have these two choices. It's in the purport to that verse. We have the two choices. either we act under the motivation of the ego, I am a husband, I am a doctor, I have to do my job here, okay? Or we act under Krishna's instruction and guidance and get our motivation from I am servant of Krishna. And as soon as we act under the dictations of the false ego, we cannot hear Krishna. And not only Krishna, also not guru, not the Vaishnavas, you know, the ego blocks the ears and we cannot hear. And therefore, we just do exactly what we should not be doing, or we say what we should not be saying, and we get ourselves into trouble. We are lost. Happens all the time. So that's, and then not only that, but we defend. We defend. You know, as we know, we're eating, sleeping, mating, defending. These are the main four animal propensities. And we usually talk about the first three, but we don't talk so much about the fourth one of defending. Of course, defending not only meaning with the fist physically, but verbally or even mentally. Right? These are all subtle forms of defense. And who are we defending? Nobody else but the false ego. Yes, this defending propensity is so strong because false ego is so dear to us. We're so attached to it. We think it's me. And therefore, we always protect and defend. But actually, the process of Krishna consciousness is all meant to dissolve. That's what it's meant for. So that's why one really important part of the process of dissolving the false ego is not to defend. Yes. A devotee should never defend himself for himself. A devotee should defend others, Krishna, Guru, Prabhupada, other Vaishnavas, but not himself. Simply because of that point, so that he manages to dissolve the ego. Very interesting. And actually, interestingly enough, in our story with Mahugana, he is actually not defending. That's quite remarkable, you know, for being a king. As soon as he hears the words of Jadavad, he jumps off his palanquin, he pays obeisances. You know, he wants to hear, he inquires. He does not defend on and on and on like other personalities do, like Daksha or Indra, you know. So very easily, if Rahugana had defended himself more, you know, then probably we would have gotten a conflict there. But he doesn't. He could have said, what is this? How do you speak to me like this? I will lock you up. I'm the king. I have the power to put you in jail. Just to show you who is superior here. He could have acted like that. But he didn't. He immediately realized, pretty quickly, he let go of his ego, I'm the king. And that's quite remarkable. I mean, it would be good if we could let go our egos. But usually we can't. We defend and defend and defend. Mm-hmm. And we do know Prabhupada used to get furious if devotees were defending. You know, there are stories, and it usually goes, yes, but. You know, that's always the classic defense response. Yes, I know, but. And so on. And Prabhupada used to get furious and chastised him so heavily for defending. So if we had more time, we could go into this, how a devotee should never defend, how tolerance is such an important quality to develop in order to dissolve the ego. And basic classic examples is Prabhupada, Haridas Thakur, they're not defending. And of course, the main form for this also is married life, actually. Yes, interestingly enough, for the ladies, the way to dissolve the ego is mainly by putting ourselves below our husband. That's the main way to dissolve the ego. Yes, to give up independence, dissolve the ego, and put ourselves below. Even, and I hope you don't mind me saying that, even if the husband is a complete idiot. Even if he is, still, if you manage to, now this is interesting, if you manage to put yourself below, you'll be the winner. At the latest, at the moment of death, then your ego will be dissolved. And you secretly go back to Godhead, and nobody even notices it. Yes. And of course, much more difficult to put yourself below a husband who is an idiot. Okay? Sorry to use that language. I just want to keep you awake here. Yeah. So much more difficult to put yourself below a husband who is not so qualified. That really is a much bigger task for the ego. So you actually get so much more benefit of your marriage. Yes, it's interesting, you know, to see situations from that point of view. So, the main tools to dissolve the ego is never defend yourself. Don't feed the ego. Yes. We don't only defend and protect the ego, but we like to feed it. You know, we look for situations that gratify the ego. Yes, where we look really good and where we are recognized and noticed. So all these things feed the ego. And we can do it all in the name of Krishna consciousness. Yes. But actually we are meant to do the other way around. We are meant to escape all those and avoid all those situations which feed the ego. We don't have time to do that. Sometimes we even like to engage in massaging each other's egos. Yes, it's also going on, you know. Somebody's flattering me, and I think, oh, he must be a very advanced devotee. He realizes who I am. Finally, somebody recognizes how advanced I am. He must be a great devotee. So, like, they'd be massage each other's egos. It's almost like a subtle business deal there. That's why the devotee always blocks his ears and runs when he hears his glorification. He doesn't like it. So, don't protect and defend. Don't feed the ego. Don't massage the ego. Facebook, this is ego book, you know, very easily. Of course, I know I'm not talking about our exalted gurus who are using Facebook. They are, of course, exempt from this. But as a rule, Facebook is the tool to feed the ego. Yes. And in the name of preaching, it's all going on. Yes. And, of course, the main thing is chanting the name. That really dissolves all the designations. But again, not just chanting somehow, gathering something around while going shopping or something. You know? No, one has to chant with the right quality of feeling, which means turning towards the Lord, being mindful He is there. I want to develop this relationship with Him. Plus, I want to serve. Serve. I wish I could serve. When will that day come when I can actually serve? If we chant like this, this longing to serve, this scrubs the heart from all the unwanted designations of enjoying and controlling. That's the main way how we scrub the heart of the emotion. Only if we chant with that desire of wanting to serve. So basically, let me finish on the time. Let us imagine within our heart is actually a beautiful Shinasan, a big throne. And it is actually meant for Krishna to take a seat there. But who is sitting there at the moment? The false ego, our constant companion in torment. He takes the seat there. I am the center. I am the enjoyer. I am so important. I am all. I am right. You know, this whole thing, I am right. You know, we cause ourselves so much trouble, anxiety, battles, internal battles. It's all the ego. And we don't even realize. We don't realize. Yeah, so let us really become introspective in our spiritual practice. Let us work very hard and endeavor to dissolve this ego and its gradual process. And as we proportionally, as we dissolve it, we give Krishna a little bit of a space there to take a seat on the throne. And so we, sooner or later, either he kicks us off or we kick ourselves off the throne. So that's the purpose of the whole Krishna consciousness process, to make a seat there for the Lord in our hearts. Okay? Can I ask for any questions or comments? If you have to leave, you're welcome to leave. Okay, Guruji.
So everything you said so beautifully needs to be said. Many of you completely satisfied, and as much as it needs to be said, I thought that perhaps something has to be said also to on a social level balance. A lot of us come into this movement with low self-esteem, lack of confidence, and let me say in psychology, if you try to break away the ego's maturity before he becomes self-assertive and confident, then you will take his self-worth away. So perhaps in this kind of discussion, it's important to also emphasize the importance that Prabhupada used to encourage his book distributors that this is something you can really do. This could have been taken to the first day of the summer, but perhaps our mother could go with more of this encouraging each other. As a Christian, as a Christian, who are religious, Christian servant, you know, etc. But to encourage,
not more courage, that's what I want to explain. Interestingly enough, low self-esteem is also an effect of the false ego. It is. Because we are trying to be something we are not. That's what the false ego is telling us. You know, you're so great, you're this, you're that. But then we realize we are not. And it has to cause anxiety. You see? So even minority complexes, all these kind of things are also an effect of the false ego. Because the false ego keeps torturing us, but we don't know how to deal with it. So maybe temporarily somebody who has better karma, he manages to somehow deal with the anxiety better. But the real shelter is to give up the false ego, to simply accept the position we have. I'm the servant. That brings peace. That brings confidence even. Believe it or not, before I became a devotee, I was extremely shy. I could never even imagine to sit on a seat and give a class. I was too natural and shy to even stop a person in the street and ask for the time. Yes, that's how much insecurity I had. Yes, and it's nothing else but the first even. It is indeed. We don't have the time to explain it more. But it is. And as we take our actual position of servant, then we get confidence from Krishna. That's the point. Even when you give a lecture, you know, if you think, if you speak from the false ego platform, you will be nervous. You will think, what is everybody thinking about me? And you will be nervous. It's a false ego. But if you accept your position, I am simply servant. How can I serve my audience? How can I offer someone the service? Then Krishna gives you confidence because you accept your actual position as servant. And you can do things. You can move mountains on the strength of Krishna. That's the point. And also one thing, since I talked about ego massage and flattering, it does not end in the five-session seminar. We are all going really slowly and deeply through these things. It does not mean we don't appreciate a devotee. No, it does not mean. We all do want appreciation. But what is the difference between following and offering honest appreciation? There's the difference. The consciousness with which it is offered, that's the difference. Flattering is done in the world of ultimately wanting to be recognized oneself. That's the business deal there, you know? But to go up to a devotee with a sincere heart and humility and say, oh, thank you very much, Prabhu, for your wonderful effort in book distribution, it really encourages me, that actually humbles the person. If we offer appreciation in a humble mood, it will not necessarily feed the ego. Maybe it does, but Krishna has his ways. Krishna has his ways how to smash our egos, you know? He knows the best. So by offering humble appreciation, that has to be there. It has to be there. Otherwise, we all need to feel appreciated, definitely. So very often we understand things too shallow. You know, when we hear if it inflates our ego, I better not to appreciate at all. No, no, we have to learn the art how to do it. Yes, that's the point. Thank you. I don't know, what do you want us to do? Can I keep going? Okay, good.
Ekachakra.
Fantastic place. It's Lord Nityananda's birthplace. It's about 6 hours by bus. It's like the original Vrindavan, completely peaceful, only cows and farmers. Very, very nice. Perfect place to enter deeper levels of chanting. Okay? There's a poster downstairs on the notice board. Please come. Sign up. It's a website there. You can register online. Yes. Thank you, Devaki Madhuji, for today's class. Could you tell me, please, if it was the new Govardhan Farm in Moorvillenvale, Australia, that you joined Srila Prabhupada's movement so many years ago? No, it was not. It was not new Govardhan. It was Colonel River outside Sydney. We don't have this farm anymore. We sold it. But Radhika Kulananda were residing there. Okay, that was a quick one. But I was many times in New Denver. kindly explain again why you needed renunciations total of 3 instead of 2? Goes a little off the topic, but people often wonder this. Well, I'm fully aware that it is not philosophically, it's not really needed, because one, the Diksha Guru is actually connecting us with Prabhupada, and once that connection is made, we don't need to take initiation. But we do have to accept that the way we preach Guru Tattva in ISKCON is that we put the main focus on the Diksha Guru, which is not quite how it should be, but this is how we preach and practice. And I simply recognize within myself that if I have Narayana only as Shiksha Guru, I don't have that same commitment there. And I feel, and very often we have this attitude with Shiksha, that we think, well, if I like it, I can accept. If I don't like it, I don't have to. It's only Shiksha. Right? And for many years, even before Prabhupada stepped aside, I had a strong relationship with Nyanjana Swami for many years. I was even writing Vyasabhuta images to him. I wrote 2 per year. But even there, I noticed, I think, oh, well, it's just Shiksha. If it comes 2 weeks later, after the Vyasabhuta, it doesn't really matter. You know? So then I thought, no, I want to have this firm commitment, really remaining a disciple forever and accepting discipline. Also, as a woman alone, you do need, you know, you cannot be independent. I might look very independent, but I'm not, not at all. So that's basically why I need more time to pre-initiation, to really make this bond, the contract, very firm and solid, you know, that I cannot deviate so easily there and maintain my independence. It's a danger, you know, as we become more senior, we start thinking, oh, no, I'm senior, you know, now I can do what I like to do and so on, and, you know, I don't need this shelter anymore or something. And I simply did not want to allow myself to fall into that trap. Yes. Madhuji, are you planning to give the seminar on mind and false ego during the Gaur Purnim festival? If not, is it possible to organize it? Well, I haven't really thought about it, and I'm not sure if I have the time. But yeah, well, it is such a good topic. My God, you know, it really is. So let us see, let us see. I have not really thought about it. Let me see. Okay. Yes.
There are also other corruption and the fact of the most transformation which a person follows. The different plans which a person follows, you know, they are not part of the past or the influence in the profession.
Yes.
I observed that most of us, when it comes to doing the stocks and professions, which is terrible, like, I don't know if it is not so much, but our own respect, so that is not given to us, that we have to. But the problem is not just that. I also want to say, I don't know, but I still have to do it. I don't know if it is not so much, but I don't know if it is not so
much. Well, it's a subtle thing. See, like, I have a bank account in Germany, and they have a website. In the website it says they have one motto. We all have something that keeps us going. And that's really what we're talking about here, you know? We all need this motivating force. So it's a very subtle thing. As long as the motivating force is the ego, then we want the title and position so we get recognized, well, then it's just the false ego motivating us and pushing us. say that if we want to serve Krishna, if we truly are servant, we might have some idea how we want to serve, but we are not attached to it. Ultimately, if anybody comes, then the ultimate issue is we have to serve under guidance. And usually, Diksha Guru is not quite enough. We do need, on a daily basis, guiding relationships, sheltering relationships. So, very simple, the test is there in our practical life. We might have some idea, but then our authorities or shelter given a person, well, sorry, well, better to do like this. So, if we are driven by the false ego, we cannot heal. This is what Krishna says in 1858. We cannot heal, and we will be lost. But if it is not so much driven by the ego, we will be able to heal. You know, and we will simply adjust. Okay, all I want to do is serve. I thought I could serve like this, but now you're coming and telling me that I should serve like that. Fine with me. All I want to do is serve. Then it will not be a problem in which capacity we serve. Yes? Also, I was saying this many times, we might become blind followers, you know, we use our intelligence, we have Guru, Sadhu, Shastra, you know, and we use our intelligence, of course, we do. Okay? Okay.
Not just something wonderful, otherwise what is the use of being born in the West? So, also I understand many things Spanish is for speaking to God. And I was looking at Java is about Florida. And so, but then other side is also that I have a lot of comfort and so I understand that was the point. The old day of one of the Western Romans was I'm not sure if the Western body which has a problem with the angel of people, but they are, you know, they look down upon, you know, so we will just say that.
Well, it's all, you know, all these things are simply sign of bodily platform, you know, that it is such a deep-rooted thing that we are also, we are quite stuck in nationalism, you see. But in this regard, my humble realization is that if we can unite devotees from all different nationalities and backgrounds under the umbrella of spiritual culture, then we have some chance, you know, to actually create what Prabhupada was envisioning, the United Nations. You know? Because, you know, let's be frank, I think we all realize what big gaps are there in our, you know, devotee communities between Indian body devotees and Western body devotees, and then there are the Russians, there are separate group, and South Americans. So, you know, especially Indian and Western body, there's a big gap there. There's quite a bit of tension actually there. And this really makes me think know, of this importance of spiritual culture. In fact, I'm going to tell you a little secret here, that we are establishing an institute for spiritual culture. Yes. On the 5th of March, we have an inauguration. Yes. Yes. Hmm? Institute for spiritual culture. Yes. Two years ago, I started to put a course together for the ladies on this topic. And sooner or later, I also want to put a course together for the men, too. And I've been teaching it here in Mayapur, in Ukraine, and also in Germany. And it's been received very well. I'm just teaching it now, 10:30 at the first session. And yes, I'm just in the process of writing down the purposes and mission statement, and I formed a board of very strong personalities who are supporting this on both hands. On the board is Shivram Swami, Ranjana Swami, Bhakti Krishan Swami, Bhakti Rasamrita Swami, and Adri Moran Puri. And they all went through the curriculum which I'm teaching, and they all think, yes, this is very good, this is what we need. And one of the purposes I've come up with, my own purposes, and one of the purposes, the last one, is exactly that. To unite this kind of audience from all different nations under the umbrella of the principles of spiritual culture. Yes. And that will hopefully, you know, help us to get over this gap. Yeah, it's our thing. It's our thing. It needs education and training. There's one verse, 269 in Bhagavad Gita, where it says, what is day to the materialist is night to the introspective sage. So these two cultures are indeed like day and night. And that's why we have the tension and the misunderstandings of them. Because they're just so different. You know? And that's what I experienced in my life, spending for 15 years quite a bit of time in Bangladesh, which is really, as I said, it's the place to experience the beauty and sweetness of spiritual culture. When I come from Bangladesh to Mayapur, I feel like I'm coming to the West. Yes, yes. When I ask my boys, so how did you like your India trip? They say, well, it was all right, but I wouldn't want to live there. Too westernized, too western mentality. The Indian people have, they talk about the Indian people, not us Westerners, but the Indian people. That's how traditional it is. Yeah, it's amazing. Yes. And I received a whole gradual transformation within my own consciousness. But really, you know, materialistic culture has become night for us. I hardly even fit in there anymore. Yes. So, and ultimately, you know, it seems like if we want to become true spiritualists, then really materialistic culture has to become like us. And there's deep, it's so super interesting, you know, there's so many deep underlying principles there, deep wisdom. It's eternal as much as things are eternal in this material world. But it's Krishna's culture. He has given it to us to support our practice. And my humble conviction is, unless we really recognize this and we make an effort to more implement all different aspects of spiritual culture in our life, we will not really be able to make Lord Chaitanya Sankirtan movement stable, socially stable. That's the problem. It's the basis to chanting in everything, right? Well, we are all busy with divorce and our single mothers having to work out how to earn some money and take care of the kids and neglect the children. You know, how can we make Lord Chaitanya Sankirtan movement stable? See? And Krishna's culture is giving it all. I used to be, for several years, part of the Devotee Care Committee, this strategic plan. I pulled out there now because I want to establish this institute. But to tell you frankly, in Krishna's culture, there's no need for a Devotee Care Committee. Yes. Well, all right. Yes. The culture gives it all. Every section of society is perfectly cared for. It's just everybody plays their part, their profile duty. Yeah, it's odd. You know, I can talk for hours on this. But yeah, it's really super interesting. So, and after I successfully launched this course last summer, first time in Germany, I was a little afraid how the Germans would take it, especially also because I'm not very established there as a preacher. People don't know me there. But it went so well. Wow. You know, it really was a major transformation for the people. 40 ladies came together, which is already revolutionary for Yatra Germany. And people really took something home, and I thought, yes, now it's time to establish an institute, you know, and get a bit of backing here from some strong personalities. And yeah, let's see, Krishna must have some plan. Okay, let us finish on that note. Thank you so much for eagerly hearing and participating.